Our God, you have called us to be salt and light in an often bland and shadowy world. Give us both understanding and discernment so that through each of our actions, you would be illuminated, that your spirit would be revealed, and so that a flavor of you is imparted through us. Amen. James Beard once asked, "Where in the world would we be without salt?" As our children showed us, it's tasty. And 9 out of 10, or for the most part, we prefer things that have more flavor. The earliest animals came to life in shallow, salty seas, and all of us need salt to live. It is literally in our DNA. Salt preserved when refrigeration didn't exist. It created and destroyed empires. Salt caused mass population shifts and exoduses, attracted invaders, caused wars. It's been used to remove toxins from the body, to preserve food. It allowed humans early on to travel across vast distances, knowing that they could carry their food with them. It's caused contestants to be kicked off of Top Chef because they used too much or too little. Salt gives savor and zest to things. It makes things better because it's there. It brightens the colors of food when they are preserved. It's repeatedly referenced throughout the Bible. And Jesus says that it is how we are supposed to live as Christians here on earth. Now, we live in a time of abundance where you can have a huge carton of salt, and we tend to overdo it, and it tends to get a bad rap from nutritionists, reminding us to hide our salt shakers and have low-sodium versions of our favorite foods. But salt was not always so ubiquitous, and so often we can miss the value of it in a world where it is so readily attainable to us. You know, salt isn't a spice, even though we may put it in that section of our cabinets. It's the only rock that we regularly eat on purpose. And even though too much salt is bad for us, our bodies would cease to function if we did not have salt. And since ancient times, governments have recognized the value of salt. They've taxed it, that the vast Chinese empires were funded through the government monopolies just on salt. Roman troops and others across time were paid in salt. That's where we get our word salary from. It's still slang for worth or currency when you say, yeah, she's not worth her salt. But it is a compliment to say that someone is salt of the earth. Greeks went so far as to call a particular kind of pink salt divine. It was made as an offering, often in Jewish sacrifices as well. If any of you have ever attended a Shabbat dinner, there's salt on the table. Mark's gospel says that salt is good for seasoning, but if it loses its flavor, how do you make it salty again? Have the qualities of salt amongst yourselves and live in peace with one another. Matthew says you're the salt of the earth, but what good is salt if it loses its flavor? It cannot be made salty again and will be thrown out and trampled underfoot as worthless. I knew a woman who would go through her spice rack every year and throw out all her spices and start afresh. She had more resources than I did and apparently a more refined palate, but she couldn't be bothered with things that wouldn't do what they were there to do. This passage reminds us that salt can lose its flavor. There is a time when something can be done, and then that time can pass. Salt that loses its flavor becomes insipid, and salt and only in word. And when we as Christians lose our salt or aren't worth our salt, it's when we allow wrongs to go unchecked, when we let things rot and don't sprinkle the preservative there. It's when we ignore the Christs who are around us and when we compromise God or our values for a cheaper or perhaps short-term gain, when we don't keep the peace, when there is no justice. After Constantine made Christianity the religion of the Roman Empire, there came another emperor, Julius, in the 360s, who wanted to bring back the old gods. He complained that have you looked at these Christians closely? He said, they're hollow-eyed and they're pale-cheeked, they're flat-chested all. They brood their lives away, unspurred by ambition. The sun shines for them, but they don't see it. The earth offers them fullness, but they desire it not. All their desire is to renounce and to suffer so that they may come to die. As Emperor Julian saw it, Christianity took the vividness out of life rather than adding it in. What are the qualities of salt that you are known for as a Christian? Are you known for making things better for your very being there? We are called to give flavor to the world, to enhance the places where we are. Is the flavor and the quality of your life and faith such that others want to know where you get your kind of spice? Or have you lost your potency, your efficacy, your worth? You know that salt is a preservative. In Jesus' day, it was used to keep things from going rotten. It still is, if anyone out here likes jerky. Or if there's some canners amongst you, know that that's a part of the pickling process, the fermentation process. Greeks used to say that salt acted like a soul in the body, retaining its freshness and putting life into it, keeping things fresh. We know that salt does prevent corruption and rot, but it can sting when it does its cleansing work. Salt burns in a wound. So what does this mean for us when we're called to have the qualities of salt in and amongst ourselves? Jesus says that we are to live at peace with one another. Salt can purify and it can heal. We are to be those who enable others to be better, to draw out their best qualities, keeping people and situations from going rotten. This is part of our calling as followers of Christ. So what does it mean to have qualities of salt? It is to be essential, but not overbearing. It means to have the potential to heal, but also perhaps to sting. It is to be able to melt ice in the middle of a New England winter, but also to destroy the undercarriage of a car. This reminds us that a little bit goes a long way. You can ruin a dish or your health or other things if we use too much. So what does that mean for us as salty Christians? That it just takes a little bit to make a difference. And we remember that not everybody has the same taste. I'm always amazed when someone sits down at a restaurant and before they even take a bite, they pour out the salt shaker. We don't all have the same palate. I can tell a dish if my husband cooked it or if I did, because I tend to salt it a lot more than he does. Not all tastes appeal to people equally. My grandparents would put salt on their watermelon, and I thought they were ruining a good thing. But they thought that was the best way to bring out its sweetness. We know that salt can be healing, but again, it can also be destructive. In a few months, you can look at the plants along the side of the road and see how that salt worked out for them in the spring. It speeds the decay of streets and sidewalks and shoes. So this is a double-edged sword. If we are to be salt, we have to be useful. Otherwise, we veer into the side of toxicity and poison. Because salt has been used as a weapon of war by sowing fields with salt so that they can't grow any food. They become infertile. So what does this mean for our faith? Does it mean that it's bad when we're in the majority? We must resist the tendency to overpower. When Jesus says that we are to be have the qualities of salt, I don't think he was talking about it in the negative sense, but that would not have been lost on him either. I think he's calling us to be agents of healing and preservation. Just as salt can be used to poison and to overwhelm, it can also be used as an agent of justice and peace. Under the British colonial rule in India, it was illegal to collect even natural deposits of salt. Indians were cut off from their source. And to understand why this was so oppressive, because the British had a high salt tax, so they wanted the salt to be purchased from them so they could make a good deal of money off of it. And you remember that India is hot. A lot of people are vegetarian, and meat eaters get a natural source of salt from their meat. But if you're not eating meat, you have to supplement your diet with salt. And if you're sweating because it's hot, you need salt. And taxing this mineral that people relied on for survival was another way that the British were keeping the Indians under their thumb. And in 1930, the Indian National Congress adopted Satyagraha, which means nonviolent protest, as their main tactic toward independence. And Gandhi was appointed to develop a plan of action. And he proposed marching to the sea to make salt in defiance of the Salt Act of 1882. Again, the Salt Act made it illegal for anyone to collect or produce salt unless they were authorized by the British nationals. And it didn't threaten the British in power. The Raj, as the British Empire in India was known, Viceroy Irwin said to them, "At present, the prospect of a salt campaign does not keep me awake at night." But salt continued to come to the forefront of their campaign. Again, they used this sense of satyagraha, this non-violent, peaceful protest, which isn't passive, which is very active, but is very peaceful at the same time. And under this ethos, one is encouraged to embrace truth with non-violence and self-scrutiny, to purify oneself so that one can do the work that needs to be done in the world. Another principle of satyagraha is to not act in secrecy. You must make your plans and your intentions known. Who lights a lamp and puts it under a basket? So Gandhi wrote a letter to this same Viceroy, Lord Irwin, requesting an end to the salt tax and explaining their intentions to go on this march to the sea and begin to make salt. And with that, the salt march was put in motion. It was a 240-mile march, and they covered about 10 to 15 miles a day. It took them 24 days to go from Gandhi's ashram to the sea. And they began with 80 men. And because Gandhi was frail and couldn't walk very quickly, that was good for their campaign. So they moved slowly through communities. And by the time they made it to the sea, they were 12,000 strong. As salt-making spread, the British, although first slow to respond, began to respond brutally. And the empire's facade of civility began to slip until it fell away entirely. You know, Gandhi didn't have to walk. He could have taken a car or a train to gather salt from the sea, but he knew what he was doing. No one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. It's placed on a stand where it gives light to everyone in the house. So in the same way, let your good deeds shine out for all to see so that everyone will praise your God. You hear that? It's not so they'll see you and praise you and your remarkable qualities. Nobody eats a dish and says, that salt gives it such piquancy. This is delightful. I love that extra dash of salt in there. No, they say this dish is delicious. Ideally, they might not even notice that we were there. They just notice that overall it becomes better. It's not to illuminate our own actions, but to point to the flavor and the illumination of God. A lot of historians consider the Salt March Gandhi's most powerful campaign. It eventually led to the Gandhi-Irwin Pact, an agreement that made it legal for people to gather and manufacture salt. The government lifted the tax entirely a year later. In part, due to Gandhi's campaign of nonviolence, the British finally awarded India independence after World War II. And Gandhi's philosophies and writings went on to inspire others, like Howard Thurman, who in turn inspired Martin Luther King Jr., who in turn continues to inspire us to seek change through nonviolent resistance. What does it mean for us to be salt like in the world? You are the salt of the earth, Jesus says. You have both the calling and the responsibility to act as these enhancers in the world. As salty Christians, we are supposed to bring out the best in others and the places around us without overpowering, but to have good taste and to improve the world around us. Sometimes it might sting in the process. Salt makes people thirsty. As Christians, we are to help others create a thirst for God. So be pretzels for Jesus in the beer hall of life. Okay? That's what you are. That's your task. If anyone is thirsty, Jesus says, let them come to me and drink. Be salty, friends. Be what keeps everything from going rotten and colorless and bland. Do the work. Live the way of Jesus this day. It doesn't take much. Have the qualities of salt amongst yourselves and live in peace with one another. Amen.